Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. How's the Rosary of Our Lady for reality? This is good stuff.
It's pretty dang real.
The Rosary of Our Lady by Romano Guardini.
Well, I guess it's also a lot below the surface. So
yes,
you got everything going
everything,
on there.
That's for sure. What a book this is. And what an author. I don't think I've read as much as you, but every time I encounter him and read him, it's quite stunning. I really love it.
So what have you read of his then?
So I read, well, this one, obviously. And then I think it was one called Learning the Virtues.
That Lead You to God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm looking over at my bookshelf and I see The Lord, but I have not read that yet. But I have The
Amazing.
Lord. Yes, it's
yep.
awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Take this book and like times a zillion. Because it's the life
million.
Of Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. It's all the Gospels kind of put together.
You bet.
And him thinking about it.
And
the
those,
Art of Praying.
The Art of Praying. That's another one. That's exactly it. The Art of Praying. I don't see that I have that anymore. I probably passed it on. But I did read that one. And that's about it.
I like that one. There's another good one that I like called Meditations Before the Mass.
Ooh, okay.
And those were a series of little, like, 5 or 10 minute lessons that he would give before the Mass every Sunday, because he was having so much trouble with people really, you know, being quiet, having the proper attitude. And so some of it is a little outdated when you get to the Mass part, because he wrote it before Vatican II.
Yeah.
But in general, it does the same thing as the Art of Praying one, which is probably my favorite, because that one dwells so much on things like the need for silence. You know, how do you put yourself in the presence of God?
Yeah.
And my favorite thing about Guardini is that he is so good at expressing the ineffable.
Yeah.
In a way that you can recognize. Yeah, and so I picked this book not, and we might have talked about this before, I don't really say the rosary. I like to read books about the rosary and think about it. I don't want to pray the rosary while I'm thinking, but I like to read them and consider what they're saying.
Right.
I use them kind of like devotionals. Mm. And I thought it would be good if people had never tried Romano Guardini, who is not very well known, this would be both useful and a good way to see the way he talks about sacred things and helps relate them to our
good.
Lives.
That's good, yeah, because, you know, whether you say the rosary or not, he's talking about, like, the mysteries of the rosary, and he's going fairly deep in a short amount of space about these mysteries, you know, the crucifixion, for example, or, you know, and other things. So, yeah, you get a few pages on that, and boy, does he leave you a lot to think about. It's amazing how deep this stuff is. It's like never ends. It never ends. You know, it's like you read the Bible and then the Bible is this ultimate, you know, we talk about all kinds of fiction and stuff and we like, oh, look how deep this is or whatever. But the Bible, the connections are never ending. It's like you could read this thing just constantly and I'm convinced that you'll always find new things.
Oh, I agree. I think it's Gregory the Great who said, Scripture's like a river. It's broad and deep, shallow enough for the lamb to go wading, but deep enough for the elephant to swim.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
You see variations of that all around. So if I got it wrong, then, you know.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I don't think I've run across that before.
Oh, yeah. I love it because there's something for everyone, and it's it just depends on where you are in your life and what God's doing with you and how deep you can get or want to get.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And Guardini, you know, so obviously he's talking about the Bible. He's talking about these events. He's talking about what the rosary is centered around. And he's just, you know, like you said, he just has a way of saying these things, but he also just has a real vision into truth, at least what I feel. He often just addresses directly, and it's just, he's just powerful. He can cut right down straight to it.
Well, and I remember being surprised when I got my copy of The Lord. And as I said, it's something where he kind of synthesizes all the Gospels into basically the life of Jesus, just kind of going, well, now he calls for his disciples. And so he kind of reflects on all that and what do all the Gospels together show us and everything. But when I was reading the introduction, it was written by Pope Benedict, who said, oh, I grew up reading this. This was, you know, we all read this book. And he was talking about Guardini in general, just saying, people don't read him enough anymore, but he's got so much to teach us. And so that's when I realized how influential he is. Now, of course, he was German, and so was Pope Benedict. But when you look around, you'll find, oh, yeah, John Paul II read him. Oh, you know, people of a certain age were reading what he wrote. And he wrote a book, maybe, I could be wrong and this might not matter, but I think it was called something like The Spirit of the Liturgy, that then Pope Benedict wrote a book about and titled it the same thing or something similar, because he was kind of thinking and reflecting on all the things that he had been reading about in that book. So,
wow,
he's really influential.
That's great. So it says here that he was an Italian, naturalized. Oh, okay. No, you're right. It's naturalized German Catholic priest. So it was like he was German, but lived in Italy.
Must and have.
Do you know what language he wrote in? Was well, did he write in
I
English or
it
did
was
he?
German.
Okay, I'm just curious. Because if you don't know, that's fine. I was just curious.
It was German? Wait a minute. The Rosary of Our Lady was published in German under the title Der Rosenkranz. A lot of things.
The Rosenkranz and Watzengrossen.
Yeah, Unsere lieben Frau. I'm sure I murdered that. And then it was brought into English in 1955. It was translated.
Okay.
And I've noticed, if you look on Amazon, there are a number of titles by him that I've never heard of before. And somebody has gone through, one publisher has gone through and started pulling some of these in and having them translated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. I'm going to try some of those. Yeah. And see very how they good. Are.
Yeah. A friend of the podcast, Flannery O'Connor, thought that The Lord was very fine and recommended it to a number of her friends, says this Wikipedia entry.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I do remember in her letters reading that she liked Guardini quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, because he doesn't shy away from things that you might not find easy to think about. And I don't mean in a bad way, but he'll just kind of stop and go, well, since Jesus was human, does that mean this and this? When did mm-hmm. he actually know that he was going to go do that and that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What closed a door so he could see that path was not going to be open.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll talk about the way the people as a mass would be acting, where Jesus is doing his ministry like this, and then suddenly it all changes. And he goes, the people all did this thing and that thing instead of what they'd been doing before. Therefore, Jesus then sees, here's the way the path has to go in order to keep going with what God wants. And so you're reading this going, I don't know if I always agree with him, but it's always interesting to think about.
Yeah, for sure it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So I highlighted the second paragraph of chapter one.
Excellent. Read it to us.
Paragraph two. So it says, one person may discard prayer entirely because he is surfeited or shaken. And I had to look up surfeited, which means like you eat too much or you're too full, right? You're so full of whatever it is that's being given, right? He must see that he regains his inner balance. He must try to hear and recognize again the quiet voices next to the loud, to acknowledge that God always remains God, regardless of how powerful earthly influences may be.
Yes.
And boy, did I need to hear that. That's a paragraph for me right there.
Mm.
Yeah. Because I do go through those periods. He talks about that even later, but the dry period sometimes that, you know, if you're shaken or just stuffed and happy. You know what I mean? It's right. Like the tendency can be to just pull away and, but it's the world, you know, the earthly influences. I just love the way that it's put.
Yeah. Again, it's that he somehow can really express it well. And the translators seem to have captured it really well too, for which I'm grateful.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like that. He must see that he regains his inner balance.
Well, and he's kind of talking about that in a way, just to even set up the idea of the rosary, saying sometimes it's not good for you to do it. You can't say it right. It's not working for you. Yeah, that's okay. I did
like that about what he said, too. It's like it's important not to do too much, he said, which is something that I've told RCIA folks a lot, you know, like the catechumens. Because sometimes you'll get somebody who's like, I got to try everything. Or they feel like they have to do everything. It's like, oh, I got to do the rosary. I got to do the liturgy of the hours. I've got to go to adoration. I've got to do all the things, you know. Right. And you're like, just, you know, too much just is something. One. You know, too much is something. These are things that are available to you. They're not on your have-to list. And there's a season for everything, you know. And it was really interesting to hear him say that. Like he said something like, it's better to say a single decade or two of the rosary correctly than to just rush through the whole thing. I really liked that.
Yeah, and I remember probably Pope Benedict took this idea, at least in part, from this book or a book like it, because I remember at one point I was kind of doing that. I was just saying maybe a decade or two a day, and it was just enough for whatever reason. And then I read somewhere that's what the Pope said, because they were talking about ways to pray and everything. And he's like, well, you know, sometimes I can't fit a rosary in every day. So I say a decade here. I'll say a prayer or two of it there. I get it done eventually. Yeah. Goes, but it has to be fit in.
Right. That's nice. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Well, yeah. He does a lot of talking about the things, the elements of it, because this is meant to be a real elementary book, although the formula, so to speak, of the rosary is not included in here. Hmm. So if you want to know how to what the Hail Mary prayer is, what order things go in, you have to look somewhere else. This is for people who either have a problem with the rosary or are looking, like I was, for something that just took you a little deeper. Because he will spend time saying, well, people will say it's vain repetition.
Yeah.
And that can be the case. He goes, but don't we repeat things all the time?
Right. That's our liturgy, right?
Yeah. Well, and also, but in our lives.
Sure.
Because you say good morning to people every day. You do, you know, you have all these things that you do or say over and over. And sometimes you say them over and over to remind yourself or other people of them.
Yeah.
And,
you know, so yeah, this is not vain. You know, just meaning of no value, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about the fact that he says, so there's three kinds of prayer. Mm-hmm. And he says, we're reminded here of Christ's warning against excessive speech. Mm-hmm. If a person thinks his request will be more certainly heard if he repeats it 10 times, says the Lord, he acts like Gentiles. But if in his anxiety he longs for expression, he may well repeat it 10 or 100 times. And it's like, and I know that so well. It's when I'm just like, oh, I'm so worried about this thing. I'm going to think about it a lot. So of course, then you're saying that prayer, but he says, so, it's good when it springs from the heart's impulse. Only otherwise is prayer harmful. He says the prattle of the Gentiles is not evil because of the 5th or 10th repetition, but is evil from the beginning because it's not an appeal to the Lord of creation, but to a God whom, regardless of his greatness, one harasses like a man to do one's bidding. And then he says, but then there's the prayer that you just say in your heart. And he says, perhaps what it voices is always the same over and over again. Just think of St. Francis, who spent whole nights crying out, my God and my all. And he goes, sometimes you don't even have those words anymore. You just have that expression. And he says, there's the third form, which is centered around a sojourn with God, around a service to him. in inner self-knowledge and tranquility, but in a manner that makes a flowing channel out of the words in which it is expressed, a force that keeps the prayer moving. In this type of prayer, new words will not always emerge, but the same words will return. Repetition becomes the outer form of prayer for the purpose of pacifying and fulfilling the inner motion. And he says the litany is a kind of prayer like that.
Yeah.
And he says, and then the rosary is mm-hmm. that too. And he goes, and it's like the antiphon for the Psalms.
Right. And I love that he says, it is very old.
Mm-hmm.
We find it at the dawn of Christendom. Mm-hmm. And then a similar kind of prayer is the use of Psalms. You know, when the antiphon is inserted between the verses, you know. And right. Yeah, we do that. Mm-hmm. The antiphon, too, is old as the hills. Yeah.
Right.
In this exactly. form of prayer, we also include the rosary. Yeah, that's something. Yeah. But I like that. Repetition becomes the outer form of prayer for the purpose of pacifying and fulfilling the inner emotion. Yeah.
And I like the part where he's like, in a manner that makes a flowing channel out of the words in which it is expressed, a force that keeps the prayer moving. So that makes it, it's like the banks of a river. I've read this in somebody else's quote. Mm. It goes, the rosary is like the banks of the river. Your thought and your prayer are what's flowing down the middle.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful.
And the rosary is the stability that just keeps you kind of directed and going, focused on the right thing.
Yeah, and he says here, you know, one might object that this repetition leads to an exteriorization of prayer. That may happen, of course, but then one has made a mistake, and we are using the rosary in the wrong way. Yeah. Right. What else is the beating of the heart but a repetition?
Yeah, I loved that when he did that.
That's something.
You need it. Always the same contraction and expansion, and yet it makes the blood circulate through the body.
Mm.
Well, because then he goes on, and this is like Francis de Sales, didn't he have, he had that big paragraph about spring comes every year, but it's always different. Night follows day, but it's always different, and that's man's life. And so here, Guardini says, is not our whole being ordered and sustained by change and repetition? Ever anew, the sun rises and sets. Night follows day. The round of life begins in the spring, rises, reaches its summit, and sinks. What objection can one raise against these repetitions and so many others? They are the order in which growth progresses, the inner kernel develops, and the form is revealed.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, all life realizes itself in the rhythm of external conditions and internal accomplishments. If this is so everywhere, why should it not also be so in religious devotion?
Oh,
it's fun because you see what he's combating. He's mm-hmm. combating the people who are like, you're just saying the same thing over and over. But he does it with such depth and I'm not sure if elegance is the right word, but just elegance of expression that makes you kind of look at it in a bigger way. He takes it and really just makes you dive deep into it. And that's what he does in toward the end of the book when he's going through the mysteries of the rosary. Each one of those is just two pages, and this book is not big. These pages aren't big, and the type has big margins, and he's just giving you enough for you to really think about it.
Yeah. I've got the Kindle version, and it's 144 pages. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This little book is 139. Mm-hmm. Well, that's including the appendix, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then chapter 3 is called The Word, right?
I liked it.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. While I speak, the word floats in space, as it were, and what was formerly closed within me is now open. Those who hear the word can grasp its meaning, then it fades away and its meaning is inside again, in my own self and in those who understood it. But with all this, something has changed. The meaning became a word, and it remains a word. In the beginning was the word, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because he's not talking about the word like Jesus. He's talking about just a word. Yeah. And he says something else has happened because he says, you know, you've got the memory of what was said. And he says, so then the idea that the word brought out can be looked at by everybody. And it says, something else has happened too. So long as I keep silence, I carry the meaning within myself and am master over it. Even if the other person guesses the meaning, I still have not spoken. But when I speak, I transfer it from my own reserve into the domain of the other. I risk taking it out into the open and thus into danger. Hmm. So speech is the beginning of history, the beginning of that which happens with all the consequences. I mean, it's just like, he's just like, oh, give me more.
Yeah, yeah. What a thought. Speech is the beginning of history. Wow. Yeah, and it's in the beginning was the word has a brand new depth just after that, you know. Because, of course, the word is Christ, but but it's like, speech is the beginning of history, the beginning of that which happens, you know. So in the beginning was the word, you know, this ordered thought, this speech. Oh, it's great. Yeah, and it is, and there is that aspect of it too. You know, we say, you know, logos is thought, ordered thinking, but the word implies that it has to be spoken. So this idea that it went from inner to out.
Well, because as he's saying, you know, without that, you don't, I mean, you have community of a sort if you're not talking. I guess we look at all those things we've seen about monks and so forth. But when you're expressing ideas to each other, that's when something's really growing. And you're also sorting out what you think. And it's just, there's something so human about speech in that way.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, stunning it's just, stuff. It's just rich and alive, he says. And it is. Even mysterious. Yeah, and so he talks about all that. In fact, it says at the end of this chapter, it says, the words of these prayers are recurrent. They create that open, moving world transfused by energy and regulated by reason in which the act of prayer takes place. As soon as the person praying utters the words, he has built for himself a home by his speech. The history of his own language and life becomes animated. Behind it is the history of his people, interwoven into that of humanity. But when these words are taken from Holy Scripture, they become an arch in the sacred room of revelation in which the truth of the living God is made known to us. Oh, baby. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Holy smokes. Yep.
This is what God uses to be with us, too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and those prayers are taken from Scripture. I mean, the prayers in the Rosary. Yeah, the Our Father, of course, was given right to us by Jesus, and Hail Mary, full of grace, was said by angels, right? And Gabriel. Angel. Yep. He said,
well, do you say the Rosary?
I kind of go back and forth between, you know, I'll do the Rosary for a while and then I'll switch to Liturgy of the Hours for a while. So I go through phases.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I do like it. I remember, I think it was in the Peggy Noonan book we read, John Paul the Great. Yeah. Wasn't there something in there? There was. Peggy Noonan had met somebody at the gym that was saying a rosary while she was riding the bike. And she said, oh, my days just go better when I do this, you know.
That's right. I'd forgotten that.
It's just like, it just doesn't work right unless I take the time to do this. And I took that to heart. I remember I went through a very long rosary phase after that and very rewarding.
Yeah, and I used to say it on the way to work. And sometimes on the way home, when I had about a 20, 25-minute drive, I would just say it on my fingers as I drove. Yeah, it's when I was fairly new Catholic, and I was kind of figuring out how it worked, and I got various books on it and read them, so I wasn't just saying words over and over eventually. Eventually, I didn't have that time, that piece of time available anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, what do you think about the posture of your body too. I had a conversation with somebody, I don't know, maybe about a year ago that I'd still been thinking about, but it's usually often when I'm saying the rosary, I'm just kind of sitting on the couch in the morning, you know, alone, it's dark outside. I'm just praying the rosary. But when you pray, do you do that too? Or do you get on your knees? Do you have a thing at your house, maybe a kneeler at your house or something?
Oh, it would be great if I did, I suppose. I don't. I sit.
Okay. I was just curious. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have different places that I go in the house, though. Like in the morning, if I can, if it's light enough and the weather's okay, I go outside. In fact, that's my preferred place to pray, is out in the backyard.
Yeah.
I'm by myself. I mean, well, except for the dogs. And yeah, I just feel closer to God there.
Yeah. Once it's warm enough. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. And otherwise, I have a different room that I go to for it.
Yeah.
But I have gone through periods where I have knelt by the side of the bed to pray. And it is, I think, a good thing. But then I get lazy and I don't do it.
Yeah. I like to say lauds from when I'm doing Liturgy of the Hours. I like to do that outside. Like just kind of go out in the front yard and sit down on in a chair and do lauds right there as the sun is coming up. And it's pretty powerful. A lot of the things that the Psalms allude to often, you know, are this idea that the sun's coming up and the light is coming, you know, so it's this repetition. I mean, it's beautiful. And the repetition is like, you know, the evil is being chased away and, you know, your day is new. You know, this is straight from Psalms. It's not my idea, but you're just reading it or while this is happening, you know, and looking at the universe outside and a big mountain and it's beautiful.
Well, and it's timeless. I mean, that connects you, think, thousands and thousands of years back.
Yeah, yeah.
To someone with the same thoughts.
Right. Yeah. Really something.
Wow.
Yeah. So in chapter 4, we get to Mary. Right? And I guess let's say just a word or two about where the rosary comes from. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was given to Dominic, right? Saint Dominic, in an apparition of the Virgin Mary, right? You may know more about this than I do, but there was a Marian apparition.
Yeah, I guess there was, wasn't there? You know, it's funny. I hear that story, and I never take it seriously. Isn't that awful?
And yeah, I know. I don't know. I don't know how official that is or anything, but regardless of the apparition piece, this is a Dominican tradition. Is that true to say?
I have a great big book on the Rosary by Kevin Orland Johnson, which I recommend to everyone.
Right.
But I really need to reread it.
Right.
Because I think I remember reading about that, and that could very well be the case about St. Dominic. And it's probably a Dominican tradition.
Yeah.
But I also remember reading about, I think it was the Irish monks, maybe. The Irish, they did so many things like that. But it might have been even further back, probably, where the monks would pray 150 psalms a day. And so they would have rocks in their pockets that they would then take out of their pockets as they prayed each one so they could keep track. And eventually they're like, this is too much trouble. We're spending all our time counting rocks to put in our pockets and getting rid of them. So maybe we'll do beads.
Oh, man.
And beads, I think, have been a longstanding tradition for prayer.
Right.
You know, yeah, throughout the world anyway.
A cord with knots. Right.
Right. And, exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love the rocks, though. That, to me, I was like, oh, that's great. I wouldn't want to carry a pocket full of rocks. But
no.
I think the rocks idea is very cool. Like you're taking a rock out every day from something and maybe putting it elsewhere. That's very appealing.
Something physical like that.
Yeah.
And of course, that would be that's the appeal of the rosary. You don't have to think. You're just counting the beads off, and then you get to that gap, and you're like, oh, okay, time for these prayers now.
Yeah.
Then the Our Father and the next mystery. Then, okay.
Right.
So you can kind of really keep your mind on what you're doing. And I remember, this is aside from the origin of the rosary, but thinking what a good idea it was because your mind's always so busy. And it's hard to quiet it down. And I must have read this somewhere, but I just thought, what a clever way to keep that busy part of your mind busy on something that's worthwhile. But it also allows the other part to kind of think and drift and meditate as you're concentrating on the different mysteries.
Right, right. It did take me a while to get to that point with the rosary. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much just saying the things. And then to get this river, which is a beautiful thing I've learned today, this river analogy where this is the banks of the river and you're flowing in between, that mm-hmm. is something that I've reached. And it's very worthwhile. Yep.
Well, I have to say, reading this book and now talking with you again, I'm just like, oh no, I feel the rosary creeping up on me.
There's a rosary phase coming. I love it.
Oh no. I know. Well, because in the afternoon, I tend to go off. I usually find 20 minutes most afternoons, and I can go off and I'll do Lectio Divina, which is where you read something and you read it in the presence of God, and you can. Usually it's the Bible. It can be other sacred reading or, you know, holy books or whatever. I also, being the person I am, tend to also pick up novels. So I've read The Lord of the Rings that way.
Yeah.
Things like In This House of Breed. So, because those are books that lead to a lot of contemplation.
Yeah. That was a Lenten devotion for you last year, wasn't it? The Lord of the Rings?
It was. And I read the whole thing in 43 days, however long it is. I ended it up on Holy Saturday. It was so powerful.
Oh, man, that's cool.
Yeah, and I tried it again this year, and it just, after about a few days, it was like, no, that's funny. That was last year and not this year. Okay. Moving on. Gotcha. So now I've been reading Fulton Sheen's, there's several really great books like The Lord by Guardini that we talked about.
Right.
This is
right.
Fulton Sheen's. It might be called Life of Christ.
And we're doing one later this year, I think.
For Christ, I think, the Lord. Yeah, that's Francis Sheed. Right. Just to make it confusing.
Yeah. I'm looking for it here. To Know Christ Jesus.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I had it totally wrong. And
we're going to do that at Christmas time.
That's Sheed?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And so Sheen is the one I'm reading now.
Oh, Sheen. Oh, so sorry.
Yeah.
That's Life of Christ. Fire. Life of Christ.
Yeah. Okay. Word on Fire has a nice edition of it. And I haven't read it in years and years. And I looked at what we were going to read later and said, well, I better wait till later. And then I thought, I've read The Lord enough times that, I mean, I love it. But I was like, let me just try this other one. Because I have four different books that are like that. The other one is by Henri Daniel Rops.
Mm-hmm.
It's French and probably from the 50s or so. And I can't, of course, I think it's called The Life and Times of Jesus.
Great.
And all four of those are really good books.
Cool.
About, you know, kind of synthesizing all the Gospels and talking about Jesus.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah. We're very far off of the rosary book, but
we are.
You know, this is what the rosary does. That's it just leads you to all different places, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure. So yeah, so he talks about Mary, and the reason that kind of diverted me into what the rosary is because it's would you call it a Marian devotion?
Oh, absolutely. It's prime one, I would think.
Right, right. So yeah, it is Mary centered. Because Christ-centered, Mary always points us to Christ. That's the better way to put it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you're thinking about these things in the sense that Mary would have experienced the things in the life of her son.
Yeah.
And so, in a sense, you're kind of watching along with her, and there are the four sets of rosary mysteries. So there's the joyful.
Yeah, yeah.
The sorrowful, the glorious, and John Paul II added the luminous, which is my favorite set.
Yeah,
because I was already kind of praying those.
Yeah.
Because being me again and not being raised in the faith, I'm like, well, I like the idea, but there's a whole bunch of the Bible that got left out. I'm going to think about these.
Yeah, and it was interesting here. This is the first time he has a little appendix in it.
Yeah.
And he has two different glorious mysteries. One being the second coming of Christ, and then the next one being the kingdom of God. And he says, use those to replace the fourth and fifth glorious mysteries, if you want to.
Yeah, the ascension.
He said.
Not the ascension, I'm sorry, the assumption and the coronation of Mary.
Right, and that's interesting, yeah. And then, of course, he just in two pages just blows my mind with what he says about it. Yeah. He says, you know, just flipping things like, we live in time, and time is possessed by the delusion of permanence. So, we got that. You got that. Just take that with you.
Yeah. Stick that in your back pocket for a few decades of the rosary.
Oh, man. Yeah. And,
yeah. And that's kind of what makes this book so good in that sense of, let's see, when you get to the mysteries, he is always, as I say, just spending, well, I guess some of them might take more than a couple pages. They might take three. But he's talking about, for instance, the third virtue that you talk about at the very beginning. He calls it the prologue of the rosary. Yeah. It starts off saying, oh, yeah, you know, we can't forget that when the Holy Scripture speaks of love, we must never forget this is the language of revelation. You're like, wait, what? I thought we were talking about the I'm loving God or God's helping me love other people or what does that have to do with this? And so he's talking about the angel's message to Mary was the request that she receive this love, God's love in her heart, and henceforth live out of it. It is here that Christian love began on earth.
Mm.
And so then he says, of course, Mary was ready to do it. And then he says, this just wasn't happiness, though. What else came out of it was her lasting sacrifice. And he says, over and over again, Mary had to reenact what seemed to be God's self-abandonment in him who was her one and all. Again and again, her son was taken from her into alien parts in obedience to the will of the Father, until at the last hour when she would no longer be his mother only.
Hmm.
He said to her, woman, behold thy son. To accept this, to stand the test of time over and over, and to grow ever more in charity was the meaning of her whole life.
Wow.
Yeah. And you stop and think about, oh my goodness, she lived past him, and John took her as his mother. But there are all the other apostles or disciples and everybody who she's being the mother to, as we see from when she's in the upper room and they're all just praying for Pentecost comes, all these things. And you're thinking about, I never thought about she had to keep sacrificing over and over and over.
Yeah.
What does that mean for me?
She certainly would have had to. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what does that mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
My life and how what we see in this rosary is there. So yeah. I don't know. He just has a good way of, as I've said many times already in this podcast, of directing you into thinking about things in a new way and then also being able to apply them to your own life.
Yeah. Wow. That's stunning. I'm just flipping here between all these incredible quotes. But yeah, the, you know, and then he talks about, you know, faith, hope, and charity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hope is confidence in God's power to accomplish all things. That's a good sentence right there. But
it is, because you don't think of it as confidence. You think, gosh, I hope it's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of going, nope. Yeah. He's going
to
do it.
And he's talking about Mary, you know, as he leads up to that. He says, each time her confidence increased and she placed everything into his hands, Mary lived completely through her confidence in God's power, a power that is capable of bringing all things to perfection, even in darkness and opposition. And then he says, hope is confidence in God's power to accomplish all things.
Yeah. Well, and when you read about the way he talks about Mary in here, both from what I read and what we can see about worshiping Mary, as some people might think who aren't familiar with it, this is really, truly about Mary's always reflecting Jesus as the moon reflects the sun. She's showing us in a more, a fully human way, because she's not partly divine, like, you know, we're fully divine. Jesus, fully human, fully divine. I'm really going to tangle myself up on this, but she's fully human.
Yeah.
And so she's the perfect disciple, really, in that way. And so when you think about it in the way that he's putting it, you can see that she's really just having to live all the things we live too, but more.
Yeah.
Because she's Jesus's mother.
Right, right. And yeah, that's the thing that I think folks don't understand about the Catholic view of saints in general, right?
Right. But
Guardini says it here, the start and the goal of all spiritual movement is the Father. Period. You know? So, yeah. But that's exactly what Mary is doing. You know, she's like the moon reflecting the sunlight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we see.
And that's why all these different sections of the rosary start with the Our Father.
Right, right.
We never forget where we're supposed to be focused.
Yeah.
How do we increase our love and trust and charity, mm-hmm. our faith?
Yeah. Yeah, stunning stuff. Yep, and then he gets into, to like you said, all those, you know, the joyful rosary, the sorrowful rosary, mm-hmm. you know, for each decade. And then just, it's so deep and so short yet so deep, constantly.
Yeah.
Things, you know, things to think about, things to consider. Yeah. And here's another one I'm about humility. It says, humility is nothing other than the conviction that God is God and only God, and that man is man and nothing but man. That's humility.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, he just has this way, this way. Yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah. Yes he does.
And here in the carrying of the cross, there was something that struck me. He said, in the last analysis, everything is a burden. Not because it's painful instead of joyous, but because sin has stamped it with the curse of hardship.
Mm.
Yeah. And he's talking about, you know, bearing the cross. Yeah. Everything that means a burden in life is shown here in its last fearfulness. Toil, destitution, pain, the people around one, one's own existence, a heavy heart, the inner void, the unbearableness of all things. And then he says, man seeks to escape those things. He will not take it upon his shoulders and persevere beneath it. Indolence, cowardice, resistance against the hardships of life all mean here for Christ the obligation to carry a weight that is beyond his strength.
Read the next paragraph too.
Yeah, so it says, the old doctrine of the spiritual life calls indolence the first and most stubborn infirmity of man. We can see here what this means. We can also be enlightened about ourselves, about the condition of our lives, about the loads we carry, the hardships we endure, the tasks in which we must persevere, about our own life's burdens and those embodied in human existence. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so good. Just these carrying, yeah, what we got to carry. Soldier on.
Yep. Well, that's it. And sometimes when you're saying the rosary, you don't need to go deep. You're able to really relate to just what's happening in a lot of different ways in your own life. But sometimes we need that help to look at it in a different way.
Yeah.
And this is so short and easy to read for all these mysteries that it's very helpful.
Yeah, and sometimes when I'm saying the rosary, a person comes to mind that is somehow connected to whatever the mystery is, and, you know, just dedicate that decade and sort of pray for them as you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember there's a book that I got when I was first learning the rosary, and it was by, I think, Father Oscar Lukefar.
Oh, yeah.
It was called Christ, Mother, and Ours.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And what he recommended, and I did this for a long time, was the first five decades or five Hail Marys, you say thinking about the mystery, and the last five you say thinking about the people it applies to.
Mm.
In whatever way, you know.
Yeah, for so, sure. So,
yeah, and I did that for a long time. I like yours better, just kind of being open to the person it might be, or maybe at the beginning even saying, you know, this goes out to so-and-so, because what it did, eventually what happened is I found that I wasn't getting enough time to think about that mystery, But at the beginning, especially, it was very helpful when I wasn't able to think about it very much or didn't have a lot going on at that point. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting to use different sources for the mystery. I mean, sometimes just the title of the mystery, I just use that and move on. And, you know, I said, just let it evoke what it evokes because I know the story. But sometimes, you know, you have a Bible there and you read about it. While you're doing the rosary, you read it. And there are various books like this one that would be good to read, you know, like, you know, a Saturday morning when you've got extra time for a rosary or something. Yeah. Then you might say, okay, well, I'm going to read through these mysteries while I'm praying them. You know, I say the Our Father, then maybe stop and read the mystery and then go down the decade or maybe before the Our Father even. But yeah. But there's so many of them. I mean, you can find them all over the place. There's all kinds of, many, many people have written on these mysteries.
Oh, yeah. And I was trying to think, let's see. Oh, because here's a book by Edward Shree, S-R-I.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Praying the Rosary Like Never Before, Encounter the Wonder of Heaven and Earth. That is such a good book. And it's fairly new, 2022. And it goes into a lot more, not history of the rosary, but the depth of each mystery. Here's the history. Here's where it kind of links to the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. Here's where we see it in the New Testament. Here's all these things. And he's never stopping also including the reason you're doing it, which is devotion to Jesus through Mary in that sense. So it's the kind of thing that you could have and just read maybe a paragraph of it. And that's good. But it's also just a really great book to read
Any
of that contemplation of Christ's life.
Mm. Love it. And my favorite book of his is a small one called A Biblical Walk Through the Mass.
Oh,
it's really, really good. I use it.
Okay.
It's very good.
Mm, yeah. Okay.
I haven't looked into all the books he's written. I should take a look and see what else he's got.
So many, because I'm just, now that we're off on his topic, I see there's one here called No Greater Love, A Biblical Walk Through Christ's Passion, which is probably also amazing. Yeah. But he has written all kinds of great books.
Because
I think he wrote one on prayer that I really liked too. But I don't have time to find it now. And you don't have time to listen to it now. But what we should do in this post for this episode is put some of our favorite books about the rosary.
Sure. Okay. Will do.
So people can look at the
great
notes.
Great idea.
Send you the links for
great
mine.
Idea.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. We'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, beautiful stuff. Yeah, I'm not sure what else to say. I've got lots of quotes still, just a few, I guess. This one right here. He was talking about the crucifixion. This is one I just need to put on something and put on a wall.
Yeah.
He says the new. So he's talking about the crucifixion, the new start that is given to us, the forces from which the new man in us can grow and rise into eternity, the new heaven and the new earth that will one day surround us. All of these issue from this hour.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course I knew that, but, you know, there's something in the way that it's said. I mean, just think all of these issue from right then. And that's what we do in Mass, you know. We connect to that spot. We connect to that moment. Incredible. Yep.
He's so good.
Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. That's just,
And these are the things we kind of need to remember. We don't hold them in front of us all the time, but we need to kind of be reminded of our higher calling.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we're not just here to kind of try and be a little better every day, try and slog through if it's a tough day, although we have to do those things. But there's also that other layer of existence that we're called to. The slogging through may get us there because we have to do that. but being reminded of these things kind of elevates our lives some.
Yeah, sure does. Yeah. Yeah, this is a terrific book.
Absolutely. I'm really glad you liked it.
Yeah, and I would love to hear what else you love of Gardini's. We talked about it a little bit at the beginning, but when you send those titles, maybe send some of your favorite Gardini's too.
Oh, okay.
Because I would love to just throw that in the post and maybe get myself a little Gardini collection going.
Definitely. Definitely will do that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But what a beautiful, beautiful book this is.
Well, it's the great thing about it, especially since, I guess we're going to be toward the end of Lent when this comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite there.
Yeah.
It will end. I'm sure it will.
Someday.
We're just heading into the fifth week when this thing comes out, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is short.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to read these little sections. You're not committing tons and tons of time. You could pick it up and put it down, having read two or three pages, and that's all you need to do to kind of get you through, give you the boost, mm-hmm. help you on your way. So it's easy that way.
Very good. Very good. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. So thank you for bringing this into my life.
Well, I'm really glad you liked mm-hmm. it. And I'm kind of excited to look over my Gardini books and maybe I need to pick up more of them myself.
All right. So right after Easter, we have an episode on Amadeus. The long version, right? The long version, you said.
Well, not me.
All right, right.
Mine's from the library, and so mine is the original, so it is not the long version. If you can find the shorter one.
I would be saddled with the long version, you said.
Well, if you don't have access to a library DVD, probably.
I might. I should look. It's possible that I do.
Yeah, why not?
Because, do you still have the video store that you used to talk about? Does that still exist?
No.
Oh,
unfortunately.
Darn.
It went under years ago, but I still mm-hmm. have the membership card in my purse.
Oh, that's good.
And my grandson, about a year ago, had pulled things out of my purse and was playing with him. And my son-in-law went, Premiere Video. And we all just rhapsodized over it. It was amazing. Yeah, he got something. He couldn't make the margin, or just he got tired of running it. So what he did, and everybody said that about the owner, they went, are you going to have a sale of your videos? Because I'm like, I would have been there. He had so many good foreign movies. And he's like, no, I think I'm going to give them to SMU because they have a big theater school and there's the Bob Hope building and all that stuff.
Yeah.
We were very depressed. I wanted some for myself.
Oh, no.
And I don't have access to the SMU video library or DVD library. But.
Yep.
No, but the library, my library, is really good about having tons of videos of stuff. So.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, our library has a pretty good section, you know.
Okay.
Yep. So I'll see what they have. Yep. Surely they have Amadeus. Yep.
Well, you'd think so.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, they've got a
classic.
Classic. I love it.
It kind of is a classic. It I mean, not in is. The way of Some Like It Hot.
Right, right.
Or Casablanca.
Oh, but
from our
too
point
funny.
Of view, it does a lot of talking about faith. What do you think God wants from you? What do you want to give to God? How do you see yourself as you're going through all this?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when somebody who seems completely unworthy gets what you want instead?
Yes.
How do we deal with all that stuff?
Right, right. With God's help, that's how we deal with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Very good.
You gotta let him in, man.
Very good.
All say right. Say a rosary.
Yeah, so here's my rosary going back in its little pouch.
Okay.
All right. I love it. So thanks again for this book, and thanks so much, everybody, for listening.
Yes, thanks, and keep hanging tough with Lent, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Yep, in a couple weeks. Bye-bye, all.
Yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.